This podcast is presented by Pacific Office Automation, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Learn more at pacificoffice.com.
Into the end zone for the touchdown. Hollywood Brown has been spectacular. Connor to the five and into the end zone for the touchdown.
Welcome to Cardinals Underground, presented by Pacific Office Automation. Visit pacificoffice.com. Problem solved.
Touchdown, Kyler Murray. That defender is in multiple pieces.
Oh, that was nasty right there, right?
The latest news and notes from the insiders who cover the team.
Bring it on, bring it on.
Touchdown, Saban Collins. Slammed to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
I ain't scared of nobody.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
What is it like those cop shows, the good cop, bad cop, where I'm going to ask the questions around here, bub? I don't know. What are those old, like, sitcom, those old TV dramas? Danny's, she's struggling
before
to...
Before my time.
Sitcom, yeah. TV dramas? What are we doing here?
I like a good sitcom, but this feels more like a Darren question.
It was 9 seconds. If you took the under on when Danny would say before my time, it was 9 seconds.
I've got a big birthday coming up. I got to get these in while I can, Paul.
I see. We'll get to that. Believe me, we will get to that a little bit later. The reason I bring that up, I'm asking the questions around here, is because that's exactly what I'm doing off the top of Cardinals Underground. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Danny Surek, because two of the three of us were actually in Indianapolis for the combine, and the one person on the outside looking in will ask the questions, and that's me. So give me a few highlights, Danny. What stood out? What are your big takeaways? When you called the family, when you got home, and they asked what it was all about, what'd you say to them?
What'd Brian want to know?
Golly.
And the dad reference was 47 seconds in. So, okay, for those who have parlays, that's your answer.
We had a good time. I love the combine. I love being out there in Indy that week. It's a lot. The days are very long, but it's fun. And by Thursday, everybody around you is running on coffee and fumes and very little sleep. But I feel like we put out some pretty good content. I think if you're asking about general takeaways from draft prospects, it seems what we had talked about going into it in terms of which positions seem to be really deep in this draft class, which are needs for the Cardinals: wide receiver, offensive tackle, interior defensive lineman. And then after watching some of those workouts over the weekend, wide receiver specifically, these are big players and they are fast. And also, not just skill players are fast. Some of these offensive linemen, these defensive linemen, were cruising in those 40s.
I mean, I'm watching Braden Fisk from Florida State. That guy can move. I'm like, the moment a team drafts him, he's going into the jumbo package at the goal line.
Well, and it's when you start talking about, like, the defensive linemen, and I know, okay, obviously most defensive linemen aren't going to be running 20, 30 yards, but it does make a difference when you're talking about quickness and athleticism, and one of the reasons that offensive linemen often struggle now and why it's so hard now to pass protect or do anything is because all of these linemen are starting to turn out that way. The days of some gigantic behemoth sitting there at nose tackle at 380 pounds for two downs, nobody does that anymore.
I mean, Braden Fisk from Florida State, I just picked him out because he just stood out to me watching him. 6'3 and a half.
Had a good Senior Bowl.
292, yes. Western Michigan transfer, went to Florida State for his final year, balled out. He was the guy who ran the 4.78 40 at that size and said, oh, yeah, as he crossed the goal, as a finish line, right? As he broke the tape and he said, oh, yeah, and they replayed that a few times and had fun with it. When somebody does something, because I've never been to a combine, does the crowd react? When you're in the dome, can you hear the crowd react if somebody, I mean, Xavier Worthy, obviously.
I was
going
to say, did you not see the video of Xavier Worthy?
Okay.
But I mean, they all kind of erupted, although it took a moment because you're waiting to see. They're waiting. It's not like a play where you see in real time exactly what's happening. A guy's running a 40. Ultimately, you got to wait for that time to pop up. And so there was a little bit of a delay. And obviously, there's a lot fewer people in the stadium for the combine than there is for a game.
So it's sort of like Olympic figure skating when they post the score,
yeah,
right? When the Russian judge puts up the 9.8 or something like that, then you get the oohs and the ahs, and it sort of reverberates.
I mean, again, I've only seen a video. I've never I've never gone in to watch any of the workouts. It is now a thing where you can go in and watch if you're a media member.
Okay, it started 22 combines, and you've never gone to watch the workouts.
For what? For who?
Just out of curiosity?
It's like the Senior Bowl that a lot of teams, whatever, you know, most of the scouts or coaching staff or whoever they send, if you go out there and you're seeing what you need to see in practice, not everybody stays for the game at the end of the week.
I mean, I've covered...
It's all on film.
I've covered whatever it is. It's 25 seasons or whatever dumb number it is that I've covered in the NFL. I've watched... And we don't even get to watch all of practice, but that wasn't always the case. The amount of time I've spent watching football practice in my life, I don't need to go watch less than a football practice.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see here. How long should it take me to get to the point that my hashtag offered last week in Cardinals Underground? Let there be a fourth QB. And sure enough,
that might be your best hot take ever, Paul, because you could be right there.
I got a big groan out of that very seat from Big Rob Fredrickson about 3 hours ago during the Red Sea Report when I brought up that CBS Sports threw out a mock draft that had quarterback going 1, 2, 3. It was Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, number 3, New England. How about that? And then the Cardinals go Marvin Harrison Jr. and Drake May goes number 5. To somebody who traded up Minnesota or somebody up. And I'm like, no. I think the Cardinals trade out if they're at number 4 and there's a quarterback like that. If Drake May's still on the board at 4, don't you think Monty maximizes that?
Somebody's got to want to come up.
There's like a half dozen teams I could name that are quarterback desperate right now.
No, I'm not saying there won't be quarterback desperate teams, but somebody's still got to want to come up. And it's still got to be worth it to you. There's a big difference between going back to 6 with the Giants or 8 with the Falcons or 12 to the Broncos or whatever.
Yeah, actually the best thing that I've been able to glean here in the last week or so is all the noise and the hubbub around the Giants doing something for quarterback. Because think about it, if you only have to go down to 6, if indeed the Giants want that fourth quarterback and you make a deal with New York, then all of a sudden, boom, you're going to have your pick of one of the big-time 3 receivers, one of the 2 big-time tackles. I mean, the top edge rusher if it's Dallas Turner, the top corner if it's Quinyon Mitchell or Terrion Arnold, right?
That was one of the interesting takeaways is talking with a lot of draft analysts at the Combine. It seems like the gap is closing between what is a consensus of the top 3 wide receivers of Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze, which is interesting. Now, majority of mock drafts and what I have seen online still have Harrison as the top receiver. However, Odunze and Nabers are not far behind of if, you know, Harrison ends up being the Cardinals pick at 4, that the other 2 receivers are off the board by 7 or 8. Like, it doesn't seem like the gap is very large, which would bode well if the Cardinals decide to trade down, even if it's a few spots. Let's say they trade down to the Giants at 6, and a quarterback is taken at 4, and let's say the Chargers want to take a wide receiver. That would still leave the Cardinals with, from what I have gathered speaking with analysts, a very, very good wide receiver who can still come in and be an immediate threat and a big piece of this offense moving forward. And I say wide receiver because something else that we had learned from talking with people in Indy is truly how deep this offensive tackle class is, that somebody could fall to the Cardinals at 27. Or let's say they are trading down to 6, they might have enough capital to use that 27th overall pick and move up a couple of spots. If there's a specific, let's say, offensive lineman, or, you know, they flip-flop of offensive lineman and now they're looking for a wide receiver, whatever that might be, the Cardinals are going to be in a good position no matter what they decide.
It was funny because we've been messing around with these mock draft machines. I sent this one to a handful of people, and Danny saw it the other day because it made me think of it when you were just talking about it going down to it. So I'm using, it's the Pro Football Focus mock draft machine. And again, this is purely for entertainment. This is not for any gambling purposes whatsoever. So the way the way this machine works is trades are offered to you. Like, you don't go out and seek a trade. Somebody will say, this team wants to trade with you. So the Giants wanted to move up. Harrison's off the board at 3.
Oh, okay.
So
again, not a disaster because there are 3 quarterbacks. So that means one of those big 3, if not now 4 quarterbacks are available.
So then I trade I trade with the Giants to go from 4 to 6. I give up a sixth rounder at 188, get back a second round 39. Okay.
Okay.
Now, could I maybe gotten more? I tried to get more. They didn't give me any more. Then we go, the Cardinals in this mock draft, this fake mock draft, go down to 6. And then the next two high receivers went 4 and 5. So then
right.
I trade from 6 to 8 because the Falcons want to move up. I get another second round pick, 43, give up a fifth round or something like that. So now all of a sudden I got all this. So this was the picks I ended up getting.
Okay.
First round, Joe Alt, and then the LSU receiver, Brian Thomas,
yep.
27.
Yep.
Second round, I have 3 picks. Ennis Rakestraw, the cornerback from Missouri. There you go. Chop Robinson at 39.
Ran a 4.48.
Kamari Lassiter at 43, cornerback from Georgia. And then in round 3, and it went all the way to 7, but round 3, your boy Fisk.
Oh, round 3? Oh, and, that's not going to happen.
And Orohoro, a defensive lineman from Clemson.
You must have been using the Google AI Gemini, because that's erroneous right there. I'm sorry.
You don't think he lasts till round 3?
No,
Brady. I don't mind that mock draft.
I know you mentioned that to me. I was pretty happy with it. All my other ones are kind of meh.
Yeah, let me tell you, that Brian Thomas, he went out there 6'2", 209, yeah. 4'3", 340. He caught the ball very easily, naturally. He went out there and hit 23 miles per hour on a go route. They had next-gen stats out there as well, nearly a 39-inch vertical. I mean, there's a lot of receiver talent. If you don't get one of the big three at receiver, you can still get a dude.
Big receivers, which
AD
is what
Mitchell
this staff
out of Texas.
Likes.
Yeah, more than 6'2", 205. They say the only receiver since 2015 to have his measurables and speed, DK Metcalf. And then Ricky Pearsall, your guy, the local guy, he ran a 4.41, and he's arguably the best route runner and some of the best hands in the draft, and he's running 4.41. So there's
a lot of talent. When you say all that stuff, why would you be surprised? I know Fisk is a different position, but why would you be surprised if he slides to 50-something?
Who's that? Fisk?
Fisk. Because you're going to have all these other guys.
You had Fisk in round 3.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so you're saying like you'd be talking like 70 or so.
Well, you're talking. Okay, that's true. The only reason
I say that too is because if there's one position where there's not a lot of supply, it's D line this year, seemingly D line and edge, which once again gets back to my other theory that if indeed the Cardinals need receiver, they do. They need tackle, they do. They need corner, but guess what? Those could be the 3 most loaded positions in this draft. So maybe, just maybe, if Monty trades down a little bit, he goes with D-line or edge, Dallas Turner.
Possible.
And then waits on the tackle, the corner, and the receiver later because he's pretty confident you can get a guy later in the draft.
I also, if edge is, let's say, like you're saying, maybe the Cardinals would take that at 27. Is that what you're kind of, like, the thought?
Or you're trading down from 4 and taking, because Dallas Turner's not there at 27.
If you trade down to, like, 8 or even, you know, 11 maybe.
I mean, maybe if you're trading down in a receiver or tackle or somebody who, regardless of position, is higher on the overall board for the Cardinals, my thought is don't force it. Yes, you might need an edge player, but if you get to the point and whoever is available is not the best player for you when you're looking at their skill set and how they would fit in here and the character and all the measurables and intangibles that go into the process of the Cardinals putting together their board. Don't force it. I would rather, yes, those 3 positions of cornerback, wide receiver, and tackle are deep. If a player is that good to where they could come in and make a difference immediately, be an impactful player, even if it's deep in those classes, I would still like to see the Cardinals take advantage of their spots in the draft.
Where they are now, you mean?
Right, where they are, wherever, even if you trade back, or you know what I mean? I don't love the idea of, okay, we're going to pass on this really, really good cornerback here at the top of the second because we want this good interior defensive lineman and we'll get another good cornerback later on. I think that there's a line to walk when it comes to that later in the rounds of kind of really looking at the needs and who you're expecting to be available in later rounds. But with where the Cardinals are, really in those first 2-3 rounds, I would like to see them take advantage of those spots and who's available.
So does that include four, though? Like, you keep – because this has been brought up in the mailbag a bunch. Why trade down from four when you're going to get a better player at four than you would at 8 or 12?
Ooh, can I answer that?
Go right ahead, Paul. Thanks for raising your hand.
Because you have multiple needs and wants, and more players, more better. Okay, if you get more picks, you get more bites of the apple in this class. This class is loaded, and next year, guess what? Not quite as loaded by most analysts and experts who are forecasting. So you know what? Load up this year.
The gap in skill level is much smaller if I'm going from 4 to 6 or 4 to 8 than if I'm at the point of later on in the draft. I understand you get to a point where it's, okay, we have this defensive lineman here, we're in round 4, we still need a cornerback is deeper, we're expecting one to be later, okay, let's take the D lineman here. But I'm saying early on, I wouldn't want to force taking an edge for the sole fact that this is not a deep edge class if the player is not a good fit for you, and if it doesn't match up to where you would be drafting that player and where they are on your board.
Well, because we'll use Marvin Harrison as an example, because that's where a lot of the fans' heads are right now. For example, but like, if you've got Marvin Harrison and you obviously on the outside, and part of the issue that I have with this right now is people are making assumptions with some of these players that they're not going to have all the information the teams do. They don't. Now, they could be right or they could be wrong, you know, but I've seen plenty of players. One thing that's really struck me right now is, as we go through this, is like, we talk about how great, quote unquote, all these players are going to be, and history says they're not all going to be great. But let's say we take Marvin Harrison, for example. If he's a next level guy, a guy who's primed to go to 6 Pro Bowls in his career, whatever it is, and you're passing on that, kind of like what they did with Will Anderson last year. Now, my argument to the Will Anderson thing is that there's no way to know that right now, because I think it's still too early to say Paris Johnson isn't going to be great. He may or may not. But if he turns out to be a Pro Bowl tackle, then that changes the equation of giving up Will Anderson. But in this case, do you pass up a Marvin Harrison to get a lesser receiver? Because by definition, that receiver is going to be less, and get that extra position. That's what a lot of fans are on the edge of their seats about right now, because they feel Marvin Harrison, for this example, is going to be so great that if you pass up on him, it doesn't matter what you get, what you collect, you've already messed
take
up.
Take the risk is what you're saying, and fans of take the risk of drafting Marvin Harrison.
Well, they're not. See, the thing is I'm saying there's still some risk involved. There's a lot of fans out there who claim, I'm not sure how they would know this, but claim that there is no risk with Marvin Harrison.
Well, there's a risk with
every player.
Right, absolutely.
Yes.
It was interesting because Craig Greeley and I talked with Charles Davis of NFL Network and CBS for a Cover 2 podcast, and we had talked about the risk of drafting a skill player 4th overall, if that's where the Cardinals decide to say. And he had an interesting point of the way that the game is moving, of a tackle typically takes 2 to 3 years before you can really start to see the true value and what their career is going to look like long term. And a receiver is usually sooner than that. So being viewed as a high risk the way it has in the past is not how it's typically viewed nowadays.
First off, on the Marvin Harrison Jr. thing, and he's a sure thing, I'm not here to argue that. I am here to cite history. Here's the wide receivers taken in the top 7 in the last decade.
Okay.
Sammy Watkins, 4th. Mike Evans, 7th. Amari Cooper, 4th. Kevin White, 7th.
Former Cardinal great.
Corey Davis, 5th. Mike Williams, 7th. Ja'Marr Chase, 5th. And there were instant results. You're absolutely right. Jalen Waddle, 6th.
So about 3 of those.
It's improving as we go on.
You know, Darren, ever the optimist.
And I bring that up because we didn't see Marvin Harrison Jr. work out. We didn't see Malik Nabers work out. I know for yours truly, I didn't see a ton of Ohio State games. Obviously, he looks really good in the highlights, and he has all the measurables, and he has the pedigree, Marvin Harrison Jr. I saw next to nothing of Malik Nabers this year other than some of the highlights. So there's some recency bias watching Roma Dunze work out. Roma Dunze meet the media. He was really impressive in front of the mic, right?
What about that question if he could land an airplane? I loved the honesty when he said...
I missed it. What did he say?
Every now and then there are random questions, and somebody had asked Rome, if you had to emergency land an airplane, could you? And he said, no, all souls are perished. I could not do that, which I appreciated.
I was there when that all happened.
Oh, my God.
And that wasn't a random question. It was some Yahoo who was popping up and then screaming out, do you believe in birds and something else?
Oh, yeah.
And
then okay,
asked,
I saw some of that.
Plane? It's all stuff.
Yeah. So where I'm going with this is we don't know exactly what Monty Ossenfor thinks, to your point earlier.
No.
And Monty, like every other NFL GM, says, we don't pay attention to the mock drafts. So we're influenced, most definitely influenced, by the fact that, for example, nobody has Dallas Turner in the top five. But wait a minute. He's 6'3", 247. He ran a 4'4", 6'40. He has a 40.5 vertical and an 83-inch wingspan. He was an absolute game wrecker at Alabama. The teammate of Will Anderson Jr.
See, that's the thing, though. Was he a game wrecker at Alabama? When I was watching during the year, before we got to the draft thing, I remember watching a couple Alabama games near the end of the year, and they said, he's really good, but he's not Will Anderson.
Okay.
So... Okay. The measurables, I saw a tweet from somebody while we were at the combine saying all these really cool things are neat right now and they're all going to be forgotten about by draft night in terms of combine stuff. Now,
meaning they're going to go back to the film.
They'll go back to the film. They should go back to the film.
Film doesn't lie.
You know, and that's the thing is we've hyped up. And the other thing that strikes me as we were at the combine and seeing all these players is like, all the players we're focusing on and doing the names of and who are at the podium, they're all gone in like the first 45 picks. And it's like, in the Cardinals' case, that could be three of them. So that's not nothing. But like so many of them.
There were like 300 plus players.
Right. But
at the combine.
We're not listening to them talk and talking about what they're saying. And that's people always kind of like to get on me because I'm not a huge draft guy. And that's part of it for me. I've been, especially as long as I'm doing it, we're going to talk about 300 players or whatever it is. And then 10 of them are going to show up and that's it. And I always felt like I'll talk about the 10 that are here when they get here. I mean, I know I can't fill up 3 months worth of content doing that, but that's kind of where I fall with a draft. It's a little harder for me because I'm like so much of this stuff is meaningless.
And then after it's all done.
But I appreciate listening.
Fifth round rookie Puka Nacua comes in and blows up the NFL out of nowhere.
Sometimes you just get lucky.
Perhaps.
I mean, it's hard work to do the evaluation, perhaps. But sometimes you just get lucky.
Well, and again, one of the things that always bothers me is like, okay, great for Les Snead for getting Puka Nacua in the fifth round. And that's a great pick. But if you had any inkling that he was going to be anywhere near as good as you wouldn't have waited till the fifth round. It's like the old Tom Brady thing. The Patriots aren't geniuses for getting Tom Brady. They locked into it because if they thought he was going to be anywhere close to it, you're not waiting till the sixth round.
Brock Purdy probably would not have been Mr. Irrelevant if people had known what they would know.
Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah. 8 months later.
Right. Or the inverse, the Niners using that same team most definitely wouldn't have given up 3 first-round picks to go get Trey Lance.
Solid point.
So my problem is this time of year, and it happens every year, a bird in the hand is better than 2 in the bush, and I want like 10 in the bush right now. I mean, there's like so many players that are out there that you're just like, man, can you just maximize the picks and go after Quinion Mitchell at corner or Terrion Arnold? Give me the corner. Give me the Braden Fisk. Give me Dallas Turner. You know, give me 2 of the receivers. I mean, you know, you just want to go out with like a, you know, like an all-you-can-eat buffet and just boom, load up your
just
plate.
An all-star team of draftees.
Your eyes are bigger than your appetite, you know, that sort of thing. So then you like
then
to
Fred Warner hands their lunch to him a couple times and then you're right. Like, oh yeah, they're just rookies.
Fredrickson's telling me about the inside linebacker out of A&M who I was not familiar with at all.
Oh.
And he looked supposedly ridiculous.
I'm
and I'm like,
not Trotter, just
So you start thinking, okay, what if you had a Roquan Smith or a Fred Warner right there alongside Kaiser White? Oh, my goodness.
And Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah.
Isaiah?
Why couldn't Isaiah have been?
Inside linebackers. Inside linebackers. No.
Darren speaks for every Cardinals fan.
So when you watch, but when you were watching this season, okay, if we're in the trust tree right here, when you're watching this season and you saw the Ravens, especially in the postseason, and you saw Kyle Hamilton, they're all pro safety.
Yes, he's pretty good.
Didn't that remind you of Isaiah Simmons? Same stinking body type, same measurables pretty much. And you're like, look at that guy roam the field, the center field, deep center field. And he is an absolute difference maker.
Didn't he
get
picked later than Simmons did in the draft? Again,
not much later.
This is what I'm talking about is like, how do you know?
Yeah.
You don't know for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, I find myself salivating over the centers as well. This Zach Frazier out of West Virginia. He was pretty good with the media from what I saw. Four-time heavyweight state high school wrestling champ, 4.0 student at West Virginia. Says, oh, yeah, I love run blocking because I love to tee off on people. That sounds like a Jonathan Gannon type of offensive lineman. The guy from Oregon, Jackson Powers Johnson. So all these names. Here's the question. Before we get to the draft, we got to get to free agency, and we're already seeing some names that will or will not be available. Did you guys get a sense or a vibe? Danny, you talked to Monayasan Ford. What do you think? How are you reading free agency? $50 million or so available for the Cardinals.
It's going to be supplemental. It's very clear after hearing from Monayasan Ford and Jonathan Gannon at the podium with the media, as well as getting a chance to sit down one-on-one with each of them, that they are on the same page with philosophy that building a team is based around the draft. That is clear, that free agency is supplemental. Monayasan Ford did say at the podium that the Cardinals were going to strike and be aggressive in free agency when the right opportunity came to be. And when I had asked him about that, he was saying, you know, it's when I say be aggressive, I mean be prepared and be knowledgeable of not just the player evaluation, but the player valuation and the market value of, because free agency Monday, March 11th is when teams can legally start talking with free agents. And then 2 days later on the 13th, that's when they can start signing with other teams. To hear the two of them talk about it being supplemental tells me that it's probably a position that they are not expecting to have a plug and play draft prospect come in. So I'm still leaning towards what we had been saying, which probably defense, maybe a pass rusher, that still makes the most sense. Or maybe they are wanting to beef up that D line. We know that the two of them really value the line of scrimmage and understand that you have to, in order to win a game, you have to win in the trenches. That's not to say if they sign a defensive lineman, they wouldn't draft one within the first 1 to 3 rounds. I'm not saying that. I'm just,
well, they need enough defensive linemen that they probably have to do that.
Yes.
I mean, that cupboard is bare right now.
I don't see them making a lot of splash moves. It really does either feel like maybe they get one big player, or similar to last year where Austin Fort was signing a lot of one, maybe a couple 2-year deals, like a Kaiser White when he brought in Josh Woods, those linebackers, a Zach Pascal. It kind of, I would feel like it would be more moves like that.
Oh, and the other thing is, like, let's take the offensive line. I mentioned this in the mailbag. Let's take the offensive line, for example. We keep talking about whether they could draft a tackle, and it is strong in tackles. And some of these guys can play guard too, but like, you're also looking to upgrade that left guard as well as finding a tackle. So maybe you go find that guard in free agency who's more of a veteran. So if you end up with two young tackles, then you have two veteran guards. That's a possibility. I like we were just saying, I could see them signing a defensive lineman plus drafting. I personally think they need a veteran cornerback of some sort with how young they're going to be in that room. So I would agree with Danny. I don't think you're going to have any kind of like I'm sure as we get closer, Christian Wilkins, the defensive tackle from the Dolphins, is going to be on the market.
And that's the name I was going to bring up.
If he doesn't re-sign with Miami between now and then, are they willing to go after a guy like that for the kind of money it's going to cost? I don't know.
The Cardinals might still be a year or two away from really spending that kind of money if they feel they are a position or player or two away from really being competitive in the postseason.
See, and if it's Chris Jones and he's age 30 already, right, and he's on the back end of his career, then I agree with you. But if you're Christian Wilkins and you're in your prime and you still have four or five of your best years in your career ahead of you, I wonder, I really wonder, especially if you can get a Christian Wilkins, it's going to cost you a lot of money, but it won't cost you any assets, right?
No, that's true.
So whereas like the Bears had to go out and give up a high second round pick and pay a record contract to Montez Sweat, you only have to pay the money now, only. But still, if you have...
It's not your money, Paul. That's okay to say.
You have money available, and it I'm just thinking that is a strategic big spend that could pay off. You get the player you need at the position you need. You get a guy to mentor a lot of younger players. You know, just like you say, if you get that veteran corner in there to mentor maybe some young corners.
And that's, again, that's the key. Like, I don't know anything about Christian Wilkins, for example. Like, I don't know if he's a mentor type.
Is he a leader type?
Do they, you know, and again, when they start doing, there's been so much stress from both, stressed by both Monty and JG that they need the right people as well as the right players. And so we don't know what kind of.
And I don't take that as not every player needs to come in and be a leader. You can't have too many cooks in the kitchen. I think it's, does the player come in and have the right mindset where they are coming in focused, team above themselves, doing what they need to do that is bettering themselves and more so the team, putting the team in the best position and keeping their head down, not causing, you know, drama or trouble or things of that nature. And that's kind of what I take it as, is being a leader, especially as a veteran. That is what most veterans end up becoming, is in some sense, even if it's just in their position room, being a mentor and a leader. But it's as long as they are just having the right mindset and team mentality, I think that's priority here.
Fair. And more importantly, coming from South Florida, he doesn't want to go to cold weather. I mean, you want to come to the AZ if you're Christian Wilkins. I mean, come on. You know, you need the sunshine, right? It's just the
Who's paying him the most money? That's what it's going to come down to.
It's the rare case where a guy like that might truly, really hit the market and be available, because every other person that we talked about and just longed for right on our wish list, guess what? Brian Burns and Justin Matabuike and Josh Allen and Jalen Johnson, the corner, and the safety Antoine Winfield, all these premier guys got tagged. So, okay, now the players who are hitting the market, big names, almost are all running backs, are they not?
There's a lot of big-name running backs. Which
Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler.
Josh Jacobs, Ezekiel Elliott.
Wow.
Tony Pollard.
Wow.
I mean, I'm dying to know where the running back market goes, because I can't – teams don't want to pay running backs anyways, and now you've got a glut of them out there. Like, the Cardinals don't need a running back. They're not going to – they wouldn't be interested in any of those guys. I would think that those guys – it feels like a game of musical chairs for real for these guys, because if you're talking about eight or nine premier names, DeAndre Swift, who had a pretty good year with the Eagles, you know, there's only so many teams that even have spots where they're going to want guys like that.
I have a different opinion than Darren. So, Danny, you're the tiebreaker. Do the Cardinals need a running back?
You're saying one of these big name running backs that are going to hit the market?
Isn't there a big gap, a big fall off from James Conner on the depth chart right now? And James Conner, in knowing how much the Cardinals want to run the ball, and knowing that James Conner has been prone to injury, are the Cardinals in the market for a running back?
I'm going to say no. Now, I think later on, as you start getting further into the offseason, I would be okay with signing a running back. I would not jump the gun and sign one of these big name running backs because of what you would have to pay for them. Because, I mean, like when Zeke went to New England, he knew he wasn't going to be the main back. But why would you pay that money and bring in Austin Eckler if he's going to be behind James Conner? Right?
Well,
but 2 months from now, what are these running backs commanding if they're still on the market?
Right. I'm not going to. I would not make that decision early in free agency. To me, that is something that I would sit on.
Wait,
I would
get through the draft. Yep.
I would maybe get through a couple weeks of training camp and see where everything kind of falls.
Okay. Oh, wait.
But if you're asking, do I think that when free agency hits, that should be one of the moves and one of the early moves the Cardinals do? No, I'm with Darren.
I'm curious.
Because I'm going to assume, I know enough about you, I'm going to assume you feel the same way, Darren.
Oh, no, well, here's the thing. Would it could it hurt? Like, I liked what I saw out of Michael Carter last year, and he's under contract. I'm curious. I'm trying to see where Paul is getting at, because I don't trust him here.
I don't trust him ever.
Let's say the running back market craters, okay? And I'm just picking a name here. Tony Pollard.
Oh, nice guy.
Great.
Sign him up. Sign him up.
Like
the Danny seal of approval.
How does James Conner handle an Austin Eckler or a Tony Pollard showing up here? Like, I think there's more involved here than just adding a name, Mr. I want to play Madden.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay. I get it. I get it. Egos can be fragile, but, you know, James Conner, team captain, you know, bully ball himself, right? The whole iron sharpens iron.
Going into a contract season where he's trying to make sure he gets paid.
Okay.
There's also...
There's another reason why Monte Asafort might be interested in test driving another running back.
I think it's too early.
Because they always work a year ahead of time.
I find that with all of these running backs, you're going to get to late in the offseason, training camp, early in the regular season, where there's a handful of them that are probably still going to be free agents. And you can make that decision then. I would not sign a running back under, you know, just assuming that, okay, James Conner is going to get hurt. Okay, let's have, you know, like the Cardinals, I'm with Darren. The Cardinals did a nice job of figuring out the 1-2 punch with Michael Carter and with James Conner, and having Amari DiMercato as your block, you know, third down as your big blocker. I liked what the Cardinals were doing enough to the point where I don't feel like that needs to be one of the big signings.
For me, it would be if you want to take a flyer on a Saturday running back in the draft. Okay. You got enough picks. You could probably handle that, but for the exact same reason all these guys are out there right now, they're going to be out there next year. If you want to move on from Connor after next year, and who knows if that's going to happen, there'll be running backs on the market. I don't know why you would want to do it.
Well, and also these running backs, you're going to talk about, with the exception of Tony Pollard, who's a little younger, you're talking about majority of these running backs are close to the same age, have also dealt with their fair share of injuries. I'm not sure what you would be getting would be that different than what you already have in JC.
I guess if I'm playing GM, I'm thinking, all right, we got James Conner, two-time Pro Bowler. I mean, top five in yards per carry. Cardinals had a top five run game, number two in yards per carry, etc. But what if, ... his shoe comes off, as Nick Rawls likes to say. What if he's unavailable?
I think that's a fair point.
Is Michael Carter a 20-touch-per-game guy? Is Amari DiMercato someone you're going to, you know, use as a workhorse running back? I mean, if some of these big names are on the market after the draft and they're not commanding because the market has cratered what they would typically command and they need a one-year prove-it deal, yes, I would consider it.
But see, and that's the other catch. If I'm a running back...
Like a Chris Johnson once upon a time, right? Came to the Cardinals in a similar situation.
Well, not really, because when he showed up, it was... they didn't think David Johnson was going to do what he did as a rookie. And I look at it this way. If I'm a... same thing with Hollywood Brown. Like, people used to say, well, maybe he'll come back to the Cardinals on a prove-it deal. But the problem, and it would in Hollywood's case, it would probably be before the draft. Now we're talking about running backs after the draft. If I'm a running back and the market is cratered, and again, you got to do what you got to do, but like, I'm not playing on a 1-year prove it deal with a place where they've already got the starting running back. That, how are you going to prove anything? You're the backup unless the guy gets injured. I understand why the Cardinals might want it. I understand when you're not talking about person's feelings or trying to, you know, get a long-term deal. It's real easy to do it in Madden, but like, this is real life, and I don't understand, unless they absolutely had no other choice, why they would come to Arizona where you're not going to get the touches you want.
I guess the sales job would be, okay, did you see Drew Petsing's offense last year? We're going to run it 30 times a game. And three of our last four games, we ran for more than 200 yards. Running the ball is in our DNA, unlike the previous offensive scheme with the Arizona Cardinals. So I agree, but I think a selling point in this case could be to another running back. We'll see. But you brought up Hollywood Brown.
I did.
Think we're going to get an answer right away on Hollywood Brown? You think there's going to be a market for Hollywood Brown right away?
I like on the 13th, that first day, I don't know. I think within the first week, yes. I think that knowing that Hollywood wants to be here, the connection he has with Kyler Murray, if he's willing to be here, and let's say the Cardinals want to give him a one-year prove-it deal, see if you can stay healthy, make more of an impact, great. If another team's going to offer him more money on a 2 or maybe 3-year deal, I wouldn't put it past him to take that. I want to, not just Hollywood Brown, but any player of it, it really free agency, it comes down to the money and the reps that you are going to get. I still believe that if it works for both sides and the Cardinals can give Hollywood a 1-year prove it deal, and then assuming that they will draft a wide receiver, I still think that could work out well with what you also have in Michael Wilson and Rondale Moore and Greg Dortch. I wouldn't say that signing Hollywood to even however many years, however sort of long, you know, deal would affect the way the Cardinals would look at wide receiver in the draft by any means. But I'm not one of those people who I've seen online of, I'm completely done with Hollywood Brown, don't want to sign him at all. I think it would make sense of, if it fits for both sides, giving him a 1-year prove it deal and keeping him here.
You know, it's not often that I stump and stupefy one Craig Grealoux. Okay, you can't spell Grealoux without the AI, artificial intelligence, okay? But I did a little math, waived my rule, no math, and I said, you know what, how many games together have Kyler Murray and Hollywood Brown played in their 2 years as Arizona Cardinals?
Let me guess, because Kyler was hurt this year.
Full games played together. I'm not counting the New England game where Kyler got hurt.
Okay.
Paul tweeted this, by the way.
And I'm
don't tell Paul. I have him muted on Twitter.
she doesn't follow me. That's why I can always pose questions to Danny, because she doesn't follow me. Are you kidding me? She's got a much more. So think about the last 2 years and the two of them playing games together.
I'm going to say 8.
Wow. You ended up with the under.
Oh.
The answer is 11 over 2 games.
Okay.
So
Over
2 seasons. So in 34 possible games, they played 11 games, full games together. And only one game for Hollywood Brown, regardless of the quarterback, is he had a 100-yard receiving game for the Arizona Cardinals.
Really?
One game in 2 years. Now, once again, look at the film. He's winning. He's got separation. Various quarterbacks failed to maximize his production. You know, the beginning of 2022, him and Kyler pretty much left off where they were at Oklahoma. 2018 in Oklahoma, they played 14 games together. In 2 years with the Cardinals, they played 11.
Wow.
So, and then here's the other thing I threw out on Red Sea Report was that, okay, wait a minute. Presuming the Cardinals are going to go with receiver at number 4. Let's just go that route in all the mock drafts. Whether it's Marvin Harrison Jr. or the latest Lance Zierlein 2.0, NFL.com. You guys talked to him, right, Lance Zierlein? After the combine, he put out quarterback 1, 2, 3, number 4, Cardinals go receiver, Malik Nabers. Mind blow, right? Okay. So let's say they do go receiver. Now, your two outside receivers are the rookie, Malik Nabers, and Michael Wilson. Here's Hollywood Brown, to me, in a Tyreek Hill type of mode, right? That sort of role where he's in motion all the time. He's the jet sweep guy. He's going behind Kyler, way Kyler ball on the hip. Who has it? Which 4-3 guy has it? I mean, you could really mess with a defense, sort of like when Tyreek Hill was in his prime with the Kansas City Chiefs. And sometimes he was a decoy, sometimes he was the secret weapon. And we know how much Jonathan Gannon has spoken before about being the defensive coordinator and being worried about that guy, the 4-3 guy, Hollywood Brown. See, I think Jonathan Gannon values Hollywood Brown more than most people on the outside presume. So I'm intrigued by add a premier rookie receiver, Michael Wilson year 2, and then Hollywood Brown, dial him up.
Interesting.
We'll see.
They don't do a lot of stuff in their offense like that, though.
It's true.
So they'd have to add. Just saying.
What was JG's comment in the media, whether he was messing with the media or not,
breaking
in the final press conference? We're going to tear it all down. Oh, what does that mean? ...
I can tell you what it means because I asked him about it in the one-on-one interview, Paul.
Oh, here we go. All right. Now I'm following Danny on Twitter. Here we go. What do you have?
He had said it was more about the growth mindset. That's what he meant by tearing things down, is looking inwards of what were we doing that was working for the players that they liked, that they were learning from and improving from, and where do we need to get better? He'd say, yeah, it's not tearing everything down of starting from scratch in year two. It's more having that growth mindset. Okay. He clarified that.
Okay. So, you're not putting the car up on blocks and tearing out the engine in your garage.
Right.
You're maybe adding a turbocharger or something like that. Okay.
Always comes back to cars.
I just thought I'd throw that out there. Okay.
Whatever you say, Paul. All right. I don't know anything of what you're saying, but if what you're saying, yeah. I'm sure it's good.
Anybody else in free agency that I'm missing? Any other positions that you think are in the crosshairs for Monty Ossenfor that aren't being talked about enough? Did you get a vibe from the combine as to who or where the Cardinals might be going in free agency? Like you mentioned guard. Is there a veteran guard who could be plug and play immediately at left guard?
I could for sure see them just looking at trenches either side. We know that's what they value, and that's where the Cardinals also need help, and they need depth. We still don't know the recovery process or what the plan is for the future with an LJ Collier or a Carlos Watkins. Or
Jonathan Ledbetter,
right?
When's he going to be back?
There's a lot of questions we just still don't have answers to. I could absolutely see them looking at veteran defensive linemen. Again, similar to what they did last year with some of those 1 or 2 year deals.
Yeah. I mean, that sales pitch you gave, like Carlos Watkins, who came over from Dallas because he was buried on a deep Dallas defensive line, and you say, hey, come on over. You're going to get plenty of reps. You're going to get plenty of chances to put up stats and be a big factor in the Cardinals' defense. That's a selling point. If I'm a defensive lineman and I'm in the open market and I want to bolster my value, I mean, come and get a lot of snaps with this Arizona Cardinals defense, because that is a position room that needs to be built from scratch in a lot of ways. What else stood out from the whole Jonathan Gannon interview? We talked about Monty. Anything else one-on-one with Gannon or from the podium even? I mean, is he, did anybody throw any questions out of left field? Anybody go for the absurd with Jonathan Gannon?
No.
Okay, that's good. That's good. All right.
No, that was probably good.
Whoa. What did he walk off the podium with? What was asked?
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was funny.
Bob McManaman asked him who the top three, if he had to give a list of his top three names he'd want it for, who would they be?
Okay, that's a question that'll never be answered. What did Jonathan Gannon say?
I believe he said something along the lines of, anybody we draft. And then he paused, and he goes, got him.
Well, in later interviews, Terrion Arnold told the story. There was a coach who said, come up and press me, jam me. And then, of course, that turned out to be Jonathan Gannon, right?
Yes.
And then Gannon went on to explain, I believe on the Cardinals flagship radio station, that he played the role of receiver with some of the corners, and then Nick Rollis played offensive lineman with some of the D-linemen. And he was sore the next morning. He took a few punches to the midsection, and he may not need to go to the blue tent in Indianapolis.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So,
although it's funny when
these are engaging interviews.
When Arnold,
I believe it,
first came out and said it and didn't say who it was, everybody just assumed it was Gannon.
Right.
I texted him later that day, and I'm like, I'm writing this story. Like, is it true? Was it you? Was it somebody else? And he goes, no, it was me.
That's good. So, by the way, I do have one question. The whole, when you're there, do you actually see agents talking with general managers? You know, that's always the long-held rumor that a lot of these deals get done at the combine. Do you see the conversations without naming names?
First of all, I can't remember if I did it this. I mean, again, they're all the combines blur, but yes, I've seen agents talking to GMs. However, you need to understand and remember that A, these agents have multiplayers, and the agents are perfectly allowed to talk to a GM about a player that
currently on the roster
with. So if you happen to have a conversation with an agent about your current player, and then right before the end, the guy's like, yeah, I noticed you guys need this position. Well, I happen to have a guy in the...
Gotcha.
You know?
Yeah, no, that works.
Like that.
That works. I just don't understand why they call it legal tampering.
They don't. The league doesn't. That's what we all do.
Is that what, I mean, like, why isn't it just called, like, the negotiating period?
And that's exactly what the league calls it. In fact, I feel like it was the last year or two where the league was kind of like, stop calling it legal tampering.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
But the reason it was put in was because those first couple days before free agency, everybody was tampering all over the place. So when they fixed it, quote unquote, it felt like they legalized the tampering.
Right.
Because if I know the rules correctly, you can only talk to agents. You can't. So if a player doesn't have an agent, he cannot talk to teams. And you have to be talking to the representative. You can't talk to the player directly during that time. And the other thing is, my understanding was you couldn't fully negotiate the contract. You could do like some general parameters, but so like when a guy ends up, like they announce the signing like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Well, they always have done it.
Right.
But 10 minutes or 15 minutes after 1 o'clock Arizona time on the first day of free agency, it's like, okay, I'm pretty sure they must have done some major groundwork there.
Yeah, no doubt. So, all right. Well, and I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the Russell Wilson and the $85 million dead cap hit taken by Denver. Hello. They need a rookie quarterback. There's really no other scenario other than sticking with Jared Stidham, and I'm guessing that's a non-starter for Sean Payton.
I'm not ruling out that it's a non-starter, but I'm not ruling out. I would still think they're going to draft somebody, but I don't. There are people that, especially where they're picking, there are people that aren't 100% sure Payton takes a quarterback if the right one isn't there.
Ben DiNucci, the backup in Denver right now. Nice guy? Good guy?
He was nice. I spent more time talking with Tony Pollard because he was playing a little bit more than Ben DiNucci.
Ben DiNucci. All right, the DiNucci. All right, there we go. We'll leave it there here on Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation.